Well, good morning, and thank you for joining us today on Tetelestai. Last week, we began a study, if you would, concerning the final battle, and from Revelation chapter 20, looking at the binding of Satan that took place as a result of what Christ accomplished on the cross, the binding being limited to one area that he could deceive the nations no more and could not hold them in bondage or captivity. And that there was coming a time in the future, because I believe that Revelation is a highly symbolic book, and the days and the times in there, I believe personally, are representative symbolically of long periods of time, and that at this 1,000 years in Revelation 20, this long period of time, Satan will be loosed, and he's going to lead one final battle against God and his people. Now, as we've talked about this, we wanted to find out, is that something that has happened? And if so, is there evidence to point to that? And we're going to be talking about the evidence that seems to indicate, obviously, that something has shifted in the spiritual realm. We looked at Jesus' declarations last week about that time before the final battle, how they would be frightening and unprecedented times, never been a time like it. And if God had not and does not intervene, no flesh would be saved. We also know that the Apostle Paul told Timothy, as well as the church at Thessalonica, that this would be a time of falling away, a turning away from the faith, a turning away from God, from the Messiah, from the gospel. And this would be happening within the body of Messiah, or the visible church anyway, the visible assembly. And there would be a falling away, people following after deceiving spirits, and that the Lord will not return until those two things happen. One, the falling away, and two, the revealing of the man of sin, the Antichrist, or the anti-Messiah, whoever that will be. Then Christ can return. But until those things happen, he's not coming back. So Paul goes on talking to Timothy in his final letter from prison to Timothy. And he says that he, in 2 Timothy 3:1, but understand this, that in the last days, hard times, perilous times, these are hard seasons. These are difficult occasions. These are difficult situations. They're perilous. They're fierce seasons. They're times and situations that are hard to deal with. They will come, Paul says, and they will put themselves in place. So perilous times, dangerous times, fierce times, he says. Times that there's going to be falling away. There's going to be a turning away from the faith. The revelation of the man of sin. Unprecedented, frightening times, as Jesus says. And Peter adds his 2 cents worth in here as well, as he is writing concerning the latter times. Peter says in 2 Peter 3:3-4, first of all, understand that in the last days, scoffers will come scoffing, mocking, laughing. It's a big joke to them, following after their own desires, what they want, and saying, where is the promise of his coming? Ever since the fathers died, everything goes on just as it has from the beginning of creation. Peter says, look, the closer you get to the time of the return of Messiah, people are going to be laughing at the whole concept and idea, because he hadn't come back in several thousand years. You know, he said he would come back. Well, he didn't. And, you know, he said he would. So does that make him a liar because he hasn't come back yet? You know, things just keep going on as they always have. The cycles of history keep moving forward. Time keeps moving forward. You know, things just go through a cycle. Things swing on a pendulum, first this way, then that way. You know, and sometimes it gets, you know, more in the middle. And we, you know, politically or spiritually or whatever, there's just history just continues to roll on. So Jesus isn't coming back. It was all a bunch of malarkey, scoffing. and mocking. And of course, we see that, and we have seen that in history, and we're going to see more of it as time moves forward and we draw nearer to the time of the return of the Messiah. So these are just some of the things that the apostles speak of. John the Apostle speaks of antichrists, plural, the spirit of antichrist, singular, operating throughout history. And obviously, the spirit of antichrist, singular, will be in full operation in the days leading up to that final battle. And certainly, when Satan is loosed, or if he has been loosed, that antichrist spirit will permeate throughout the earth. It's going to spread, and it's going to grow increasingly more powerful in the spiritual realm, because God's going to permit it. And we know that, we're told by Paul in the letter to the Thessalonians, that God is going to allow this to happen. He's going to allow the people to be deceived. Why? Because they made a willful choice not to love and embrace the truth, but rather they have chosen to embrace the lie. Therefore, God will send them a spirit of delusion so that they will buy into it. And that's what's going to happen. When you make the choice not to believe the truth, not to believe God, you open yourself perilously up to deception. And that is what Paul says, as well as John and Peter. Jude warns as well about the wickedness that will be in the last days, the perversion, sexual perversion especially, that will be in the last days, and the clamoring for people's rights and very self-centered ways of living and very carnal and fleshly pursuits. Jude describes it. And we see all of this going on around us in the world currently. And obviously, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to note that, especially in the last 15 or 20 years, these things have grown increasingly, exponentially worse. And the closer we draw to the return of Messiah, they're going to get even worse than they have been. And, we're sort of in the very beginning stages, if you would. So these are some things that the apostles have warned about, Jesus have warned about concerning the final days leading up to that final battle. So what we are going to do tomorrow is we're going to begin to investigate. We're going to be looking for evidence so that we, can present a case and have enough proof. Just like in a courtroom, the burden of proof is a party's responsibility to prove a disputed charge, to prove an allegation, to prove that, or to defend someone. You've got two components to a burden of proof. You have to be able to produce evidence, and you have to be able to persuade a judge or a jury. You have to give enough of those things, produce evidence and persuade, in order to get people beyond a reasonable doubt to convict. So we're going to begin to look at the evidence and begin to take a step-by-step process to see, has something spiritually happened in the spiritual realm within the last 120 years or so that indicates there's been a shift and very possible the loosing of the evil one? Well, may the grace and peace of the Lord Jesus Christ be yours in fullest measure, and Lord willing, we will see you again tomorrow.